William, let me ask you to set the scene. For anyone who can't picture it, give us a description of the Sahara. Where does it start and end? How big is it? What does it look like or feel like and smell like?
It's very big. It's the biggest desert in the world. It's about the size of the United States, including Alaska. It spans all of North Africa, northern third of Africa, in fact, and it is mostly treeless. However, it's not all sand. Only a certain amount of it is sand. Let's say there are areas about the size of France which are nothing but sand, but it also has rock and gravel and has some quite large mountains in it.
And is it always hot everywhere? Does it get cold in some places?
In the winter, it gets quite cold, and at the higher elevations, it snows. However, in the summer and in the lowlands, it is extremely hot. It's the hottest place on Earth, at least in terms of size. I mean, there are places like Death Valley, which are just as hot, but they're not as big. The heat in the Sahara becomes inescapable, and I think that intensifies its effect.
What inspired you to go to the Sahara?
I like deserts. I think it has to do with the horizons, the ability to see, the sense of space and vastness. And if you like deserts, well, the Sahara is the ultimate desert.
What are the dangers inherent in visiting the Sahara, and were you aware of them before you got there?
There are two big dangers in the Sahara. The first is thirst. A desert is a desert because it doesn't have any water, and that goes for people who go there too. They don't have water unless they carry it. There are oases. The oases are small towns often. They're not the water holes of popular imagination, but they're places built around wells. But when you're moving between the oases, you often are moving across trackless desert. And if you break down, you're in trouble. If you will run out of water, and when you run out of water, you will die, and you'll die rather quickly. The other danger in the Sahara right now is political. Certainly in Algeria, where most of this book takes place, there is a bloody civil war going on, and it's particularly dangerous for European or American.
Things really heated up there politically in the last several years. Were you there in the last several
Yes,
years?
yes.
And how did it touch you?
Well, it didn't touch me in any with any physical violence. It touches you in the way you look at the people, the way you look at the land, the way you move, the way you hold yourself. You travel with caution, you keep moving, you travel with assertion, and you try to look as if you always know where you're going.
How did you get around?
Well, whatever is available. In the north of the Sahara, where there are decent roads, you can travel by communal taxi, the bush taxi of Africa. As you get farther into the desert and the roads disappear and the desert becomes harsher, you have to begin to travel by, well, there are buses, and then after that by cargo trucks. You go to the market, you wait days, you find finally someone who's moving a load of some kind of cargo. I remember once it was chickens, once it was dates, once it was goats. You talk to the driver, you get a ride, and you join usually, oh, 20 or so other people who are also riding on the truck. And from the driver's point of view, it's a good deal because he has people to dig the trucks out or the truck out when it gets stuck. And the trucks get stuck all the time.
William, you have a passage in your book where you talk about some Sahara nomads. I wonder if you could read that for us.
Sure. This takes place in Algeria, just outside of an oasis. On a bright afternoon, Ucal drove me to his homestead south of town. It lay in a desert depression on land available to anyone willing to work it. Ucal had claimed 10 acres of level ground and an equal amount of hill. He had drilled a well and hired two nomads to clear the rocks for him. The nomads were illegal immigrants, Tuaregs from the highland deserts of Niger to the south. The Tuaregs are Berber nomads, fierce camel riders who controlled the Sahara's mountainous core for thousands of years. These two were typically tall and gaunt and wore the shesh of the hard desert, a long cotton turban wrapped first around the head, then forward around the nose and mouth and neck. The shesh protects against the dryness and dust of the hard desert, but more important still, it gives its wearers the power of anonymity. Tuareg society was built on raiding and war. Tuareg men were so convinced of the shesh's advantages that until recently, they never showed their faces to strangers. Tuareg women, by contrast, do not veil themselves. Europeans, excited by this apparent liberation, have misunderstood the shesh and its context. The bareness of the women's faces is in fact an expression of their vulnerability. The men's shesh is not a veil, but a mask.
How often did you come across nomads? I mean, are they everywhere or are they rare sightings?
Well, the population density in the Sahara is very low, so you don't come across anyone very often. But no, it's quite common to come across nomads. As you're wandering, let's say in a truck, there might be two or three trucks moving together through the open desert, and out of the middle of nowhere, suddenly there are people running. Typically the children are coming out to the trucks and are begging. In the distance you might see tents, camels, and adults. The nomads send their children out to intercept the trucks and to try to get sugar, especially a little food and water. And that's a little odd because, of course, the existence now of these trucks in the desert has changed the dynamics of water in the desert. So they're sort of movable, portable oases.
What was the most surprising event or encounter that you experienced?
I would say that the existence of Tamanrasset, the town at the center of the Sahara in southern Algeria, is always a surprise to everyone who goes there. It's a beautiful, essentially adobe town of 40,000 people, built in American Southwest style mountains. And it is a town which survives entirely on smuggling. It is really the modern Timbuktu of the Sahara. It's a trade center. It's very dynamic. It's full of very impressive people who are wandering the desert for a living. And it's an attractive place and completely unexpected. I mean, you get there, you've been traveling for many days through trackless terrain, and you would never expect to see this place, this thriving community.
What are they smuggling and trading in Tamanrasset?
Well, electronics are a big item because they don't go bad in the heat. Whatever has an import tax on it is open, is a good subject for trading and smuggling.
And it's coming from and going to where?
Well, the electronics are coming from sub-Saharan Africa and going into Algeria and also into Libya.
Do they have telephone service, electricity, running water?
They have electricity, yes. There's a little power plant. Running water, depends on the day. The water's a big problem in Tamanrasset. Telephones, well, they're always promising great new developments in the telephone service. There are two lines into Tamanrasset. That is, if two people are talking, there is no telephone service.
Throughout the book, you remind the reader that, and I quote, Sahara teaches by taking away. What do you mean by that?
I mean that for an American or a European, one of the great beauties and valuable, I think, lessons of a place like the Sahara is the extent to which it does take away the extraneous froth of our lives. We live here in such an extreme of consumption and speed and activity. A place like the Sahara, where for lack of water alone, you simply can't have all of that stuff. It is a very interesting lesson to see how people live quite well, really, without all of this stuff. And it is personally appealing to me. I have a sort of a natural yearning for austerity, as I think the writing demonstrates.
Are you anxious to go back?
Sure, I'll go back many times. Right now, Algeria is, of course, very dangerous. And the northern Algiers, which is not in the desert, but on the Mediterranean coast, is especially dangerous. I mean, I don't have a strong desire to have my throat cut. And I think I'll wait another couple of years.
William Longavisha is author of Sahara Unveiled, subtitled A Journey Across the Desert.